Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Alex.
And this is Matt.
And this is Cursed Dice Studios, episode number 7. And today we're going to talk about interesting ways to start up your new campaign.
Or at the very least, ways to start off a campaign, start off an adventure that isn't meeting in a tavern.
So, system ambiguous. We'll go over anything from D&D to Shadowrun to maybe even like Space Station Future. The tavern cliche, it's a trope for a reason.
It is. It's because it's such an easy way to have everybody in one location doing marginally the same things.
Yeah, and like historically, and even up to, you know, current times, they didn't have TV. They didn't have the radio or anything. So going to the tavern was where everyone kind of collided. Yeah. That's where you got your news, your gossip, your entertainment, your drinks.
Not only for around town, but also travelers who were passing through would stop in.
Yes.
And just to get some rest, to try and sell some stuff, to figure out what's going on in the town for good or more nefarious reasons.
So definitely, it ended up lending itself to be a great place for any campaign to start because it made sense for people to meet there of different backgrounds. Yeah. The problem lies is that so many games start in a tavern now that people try to avoid it heavily. And I've started games in taverns when it's made sense.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, as you've noticed with my games, I really like that first session.
To be intense. Just intense, hit the ground running.
Yes. And go. In the middle of something. Not even like a slow start. Because I feel like when you give the players enough time to think in the beginning, it kind of gives you a slow start. But if you take away that time to think and you just throw them right into the action, and you guys are all brothers in arms right now in this moment because things are happening.
Because if you don't, you're probably just going to die.
I think that like lends to a really good start where the players all now have something in common at the table. You know, you may have had everyone write ways that they know each other and things like that, but it hasn't actually happened. It's just story. So for them to experience it together, first things first, I think there's a lot of power in that. For starting a game.
Oh, yeah, no, it's awesome. The keep up or you're left behind atmosphere.
Exactly.
Will lend itself very good to a situation like that because most NPCs, in especially if you're starting off at first level, aren't going to be able to keep up.
No.
Like, your average commoner cannot keep up with a first level PC because you're, like, those people are a first level PC for a reason.
They can pretty much keep up with the wizard.
Yeah.
Until the wizard starts throwing fireballs.
Yeah, and at that point, it's a whole bunch of confusion.
Yeah, because if you look at the commoner for at least Dungeons & Dragons, I know off the top of my head that they have a 1d8 hit die.
Yeah.
You know, and that is just across the board, that is a commoner. And they don't have weapon proficiencies. They pick up like a pitchfork or a shovel or a beer bottle. They're not strong. These are just your average common folk.
Yeah, they have no training. Your people about town.
Exactly. They have no training, no proficiency, really. I mean, there are people who do have those things that are, you know, commoners. But when you look at just that block for just a commoner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot.
They're butter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I've always been a fan of that just because I like getting right into the action.
Yeah.
Getting engaged in it. And then once everything calms down, take the seconds to be like, oh, all right. So two things. What happened and who are you?
Exactly.
then that opens up the opening introductions.
Yes.
Where you normally wouldn't have time to do that in that kind of situation.
So, I've given you a slower start in a campaign.
Yeah.
And then when we revisited the campaign, I gave you a much faster airborne start.
Yeah. Yeah, there was that. That was fun.
We've talked about the opening to Darren's original opening for the game.
Yeah.
Before, where I touched upon each character individually to start. And instead of having you guys in a tavern, I had you guys in different places of a marketplace.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, big cities and marketplaces,
yeah,
fairly large. So it's,
so you guys,
it's
are,
the reason.
You guys go down the bazaar. You got the paladin is going and he's shopping around. The cleric was out shopping herself and kind of ducking around through carts. And then there was you.
I hijacked a market stall.
Yep.
And was when the owner was off doing something else. And I was spinning some tales and weaving some stories to sell off merchandise as being fake magic.
Yep.
Or as being magic to the other players.
And to keep that game going quick and keeping everyone involved and getting people to meet each other, I started describing this item to the paladin that he would take notice in. So he went over to this cart, and he was looking. He says, "Oh, I say to the shopkeep, how much?" So I say, "Hey, Matt, how much? You know, you've taken over this cart. You talk to the shopkeep. He's off on a break right now. So you said that you would man the cart for him, and you know,
I don't have a whole lot better to do right now. So why not?
I start the game off with just throwing you into a situation where you have to improv and steal money from one of your fellow teammates. But
I would also like to think that I did really well in that situation.
That was good.
I kind of rolled with it really well. I'm proud of myself.
I threw you the ball there and you caught it. It was really good. And then I threw you in the next opening.
Yeah.
So the next opening, most of the party that we had, or the players we had for that game, kind of fell off and went different directions. So we took a break off from the campaign for a couple months, came back to it, got a new player. You know, right now it's just a DM, myself, two players. And I needed a way, because you guys ended in such a hard to kind of come back to a spot. Yeah, I mean, where we left off, you guys were, you and your old party were heading off to Baba Yaga, and you were very close to her hut, off in the swampy wasteland.
Yeah.
So I needed a way to get you guys all together, and I got really lucky with the new paladin, whose backstory, she has a connection where she's connected to the Fae the same way that you are.
Yeah.
Sort of. You're bound to them through contracts of warlockdom.
Yeah, I have less than moral obligations.
Yes, and then she has a twin brother that is taken by the Fae.
Yeah.
And she's sent on this kind of quest to go and find him. So you guys both, for your different reasons, end up logically going to Baba Yaga, in this case, you to save your life and for her to get answers. So that gave me an ability to get you guys to meet in that swamp perfectly. And I also had this prior engagement where I needed you to get seeds from the hangman's tree.
Yes.
So what do I start off with? You are airborne, and she's approaching and seeing the situation of the old members of the party getting struck down, you getting thrown through the air, landing prone.
Oh, hey, what's up?
You know, we start that off with, "Hey, Matt, make a dex save, you know, to see if you land." So I like those action-packed starts because there's no time to think. You're approaching this, you're slowed down, it's going to take you a little while to get there. You know, what are you doing on your way there? What ranged things are you doing? What are you saying?
Not to mention, it gives the characters in the game something to talk about after. Yeah,
definitely.
As opposed to just the stilted silence of, well, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? What are you doing here? What are you doing here?
Also, between that and between the story that you guys wrote and unwittingly gave me the best links to put you guys together.
Yeah. It did work out really well.
Organically, and in the hardest part of any campaign, is the part where you inevitably get to that first mission for some reason, and then all the players look at each other as their characters and go, "Why are we still together?"
Yeah.
And you guys made it so I could just, you know, dot the I's, cross the T's, and just kind of put you guys on the same path together where it's like, we could do this separately, but we're going to be walking down the road 10 feet apart.
Yeah.
This whole way.
Entire time.
And then from there, I just connected her right over to your characters, Patron, and now you guys have something very in common.
Oh yeah.
So I'm very proud of myself for this one, and I'm very happy that you guys made it so easy for me. But those are some of my favorite starts I've done recently. And we got plenty of ideas for how you can start not in a tavern, so we're gonna throw out a bunch of ideas. Take them, use them, abuse them.
Yell at us for them because their youth don't like them. Whatever.
That's fine.
So, my first idea that I had was keeping it fairly local to the idea of starting a tavern. And that is, everyone lives in the same village to start off with. Still keeping it pretty, pretty local, pretty simple. And everybody's still around. And at that point, everybody would know each other as well. So it's not like you're just meeting with random Joe Schmo in the tavern for the first time ever. No, it's Jim who's lived down the street from you for the past 10 years, so you know about him.
Okay.
So you might not know his dirtiest, darkest secrets, but you know Jim who lives down the street.
So you're starting maybe kind of folk hero, coming into a folk hero status here.
Yeah.
Where these are all people who a small town, I've seen his face. There's only 3,000 people in this town.
Yeah. And then that town comes under siege by orcs, or there's a goblin incursion.
I think
or
orcs
a cult
would be...
takes hold.
Yeah, I think
in the city.
If you start at level one, orcs would be kind of a strong start. Goblins.
Well, I mean, you don't have to fight the orcs.
That's true too. Yeah,
it could be orcs raiding the town, and then you manage to get
escape.
You and like three caravans or carts out of the city, past the orcs. And then you have that link, you have that trauma.
I like that. In the
and you have that road that you're going down for a little while.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah. And then there's always, as always, there's one of my personal favorites is cults. I love cults.
Yeah, fanatics.
Yeah. Just taking seed in the center of town if you want to have a local adventure.
Yep.
Yeah.
Start off local and, yeah. and build up from there. Yeah, that, I mean, that's a real good way to build any campaign, too. Yeah. Just focus on the small area and then build the map out from there.
Oh, yeah. That and you get everybody who knows each other.
Yeah.
Which would also go for the why are we still together? Which is better the evil that you know or the people that you know than going in with some random strangers.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Which, I mean, if somebody dies, it might not work out too well getting into the party, but.
Yeah, well.
It's what you get.
Definitely. So, for a start, I had. I like action. So, I had this idea. That the most dangerous game, it's kind of taking that the idea of you start off as imprisonment or gladiators, but taking it from this is you guys are on an island, and you guys wake up and you're in the middle of a jungle looking at each other. There's a spattering of like daggers on the ground in front of you guys, and you're just stripped of all whatever gear you would have had in the first place. You don't have if you're any kind of sorcerer, wizard, or warlock or any material components you need, or any arcane focus, if it's not a part of you, then you don't have it right now. And all you've got is your cantrips if you're capable without your focuses. And
I would like to mention that Darren is a blade lock. So
level one. So, so you guys are there and you gotta like, okay, we're waking up to a horn going off, you know, a hunting horn. And you hear off in the distance dogs, and you hear, you know, the crashing of like some horses, and you guys are like, I don't know what's happening here.
First that instinct, doesn't sound great.
Yeah, first instinct, let's run, let's hide, let's escape. So then you have this kind of this battle where you have maybe some like low level kind of bandit kind of stat block guys.
Yeah.
You got one guy that's a bit tougher, and you guys just gotta you have to use your brains here. You gotta let's make traps. Let's hide. You got to use some skill checks. And at the end of it, like after the combat, after all the skill checks, after the hiding, the creating, now we got to do a little bit of adventure, search, find our way to the side of the island where the boats are, hopefully, because you don't know where the boats are. So with that gives you a really strong start that creates this huge bond to that trauma that we were talking about. And then from there, you guys... If they decide to stick together. But if you feel like your players aren't there yet, they're on a boat escaping. So now you have Sea Adventure, and maybe the next island that you stop at is just as bad. It has another problem. And you guys just survive. And you just kind of keep
doing... You hop from the most dangerous game over to Jurassic Park.
Yeah, you know, go to Schult. You know, and you just keep on just tacking on that trauma. And that until they feel like, no, we're a group of people who belong together, and then start throwing the bigger problem, the larger issue to the campaign.
Now you're on the sea, on the ship, but lo and behold, the game isn't over.
Yeah.
If you have access to boats, who else do you think has access to boats?
Did you kill everyone on the island? You know?
Right?
Yeah. Maybe there's been a ship with black sails following you, and you don't know if that's pirates, the people, don't know.
It looks fancy.
Yeah.
You know the Navy don't go out this far. My next one that I want to go into is, I've seen it in movies. I've seen a kind of thing that was like it in Game of Thrones.
Okay.
And that is, I have it written down as the death of a king in the middle of a speech. Of a public speech.
Okay.
So, assassin comes in, murders the king, you and everybody else there is witness to it. And so, that could be for a political incursion. An invasion could have just started, and now there are sleeper agents within that big crowd.
Okay.
Who are coming up. It could be... Maybe it was some kind of giant monster that came over. Go straight Critical Role, potential spoilers if you just started catching up to it. And Thordak comes in.
Oh, the Cinder King, yeah.
Yeah,
the whole
comes in, attacks the city. Now you're stuck in the city.
Yeah.
And I like the assassin idea, because I like the political intrigue.
What I like about that, too, is that whole concept, that's not, like, that doesn't just have to be, I mean, none of these have to just be D&D.
Oh, yeah.
That would make a great, like, there's a sniper, and now you can have the players, you know, if this is a modern session, or even if it was, like, a medieval, like
or
a
future.
D&D, or future, now you got players who are...
Shadowrun, that would be absurd.
Right? You got people who are like, newbies to the guard, or some kind of agents. You have people who are just, like, your old veteran civilian now. You
one day away from retirement.
Yeah. I mean, you could have so many different kinds of people who are viewing that.
Yeah, because it's just the people of the city.
Definitely. And I think that if you're going to go with the political intrigue and the kind of the mystery of who the shooter is kind of thing, there was a movie that did that really well that, like, you wouldn't want to do it the whole campaign like the movie did with it, but I think it was like Vantage Point or...
Oh, was that
there was
or Phone Booth or...
Not Phone Booth. It was a word that that had to do with, like, different perceptions. I just forget the name of it.
But it was the
same exact situation replaying. It happened once, but you're seeing it from everyone's different point of view.
Oh, it had all the people who were getting capturing the recordings of the event that went down.
It was the perspective of this guy who, like, is behind the scenes trying to stop it. It's the perspective of this person who is just a civilian who saw a little too much and is trying to help.
And this guy who's a journalist who actually has it recorded.
Yes.
And they're analyzing the footage.
To have the players from their different walks of life there, see, and then just describing what they see from their different perspectives and what they see in those coming moments of all the hecticness and everything of it.
Yeah.
And then to bring them all together.
Who saw what.
Yes, and then bring that camera view from, you know, five different players to one camera, one group of people, and now that, like, they're kind of sharing what they've seen and to bring it together.
Get some pre-made index cards ready, so that way you can be like, all right, you saw this, you saw this, you saw this.
I think that could be really, really cool.
A great start. It depends on a bit more player agency.
Yes.
And the players actually... not being too hypercritical over what their characters are doing and why they want to be together. Just because that's when they might have to force a little bit, depending on where you want your character to be within that situation.
Yeah.
But if you do have it there and you do give them the reasons, it can work out to be something great, especially for a first adventure.
Yeah, and I mean, if it's a campaign, it's the first episode or session of a campaign, I find that I take away a little bit of player agency.
Yeah.
Just because, guys, we're starting a game, you know? The game needs to start for the game to start. So, for whatever reason, I don't care if you're lactose intolerant, you're at this ice cream booth with everybody else. Because that's just where I need you to be. So, I need you to help me by coming up with the reason why you're actually there.
I'm the angry, pissed off teenager who's behind the cash register.
Yeah, right. There you go. Yeah, I don't even like ice cream. I just have to work here on the weekends because my mom's going to take away my cell phone if I don't pay for it.
Like, boom, right there. Perfect.
There it is. So I like that. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, I've seen it in movies. My brain goes to Ned Stark from Game of Thrones and Killed by Joffrey.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Publicly. Yep. Like, that seems awesome to me. It's like, if that was your king or your leader...
Mm-hmm.
And then that evil little midget king just comes over and is like, nah, kill him. He did everything I wanted, but kill him anyways. It's like, boom, big enemy.
Oh, yeah.
There's the big bad.
And, I mean, that actor played that off so well.
It was really good. All right, so what's your next one? What you got?
All right. So for my next one, I was thinking of, you guys are in the tavern, right? Yeah. You're beneath the tavern. So, like... It's that cheeky, like, we're in the tavern, we're not in the tavern.
We're at the tavern.
We're at the tavern, we went through the tavern.
But we're no longer in the tavern.
But we're under the tavern. We're at a secret fight club.
Okay.
So
okay. Dibs on Barbarian.
Yeah. So you get your rowdy characters in here. You get. I mean, this is just like, let's go to the tavern for Bloodsport downstairs. You know, let's go through that.
The barkeeper's in on it. It's yeah. only every Tuesday. People pay 5 gold to get in.
That like... secret door, you go downstairs, the town guard doesn't know about it. It's the fight club. So, you got that cheeky, like, guys, you're all in the tavern. And you're watching, like, the
technically.
Sky. Technically. You guys all keep your eye out the window. You're waiting for dusk to fall. Because as soon as dusk falls, you go over to the barkeep, you hand them a couple gold, you know, 10 gold ahead.
Yeah.
And then he opens up the bar and you go walk into the back room. And you see people going one at a time, a couple minutes apart from each other, for about an hour. And when you make it down yourself, there is maybe 50 people crammed into this large room with a big recessed, like, sanded pit. And, you know, there's two guys down there warming up right now, yeah. you know. And then
there's some Zen dude who's off sitting in the corner. He's going to be the boss fight of the first.
Right.
Of the first fight. The monk.
And you got someone taking bets, and your characters are down there. You guys can start right off of gambling. You guys can throw in some skill checks here. You guys can get people in there fighting.
Ah, God, you know? I'd be the rogue. I'd be the rogue.
It just gives you so many opportunities for, you know, your fighter type people, your paladin, fighter, barbarian. These guys can a monk. They can all get in there, and like I want to throw down and fight. That's not saying that, you know, no one else can. If the wizard wants to get down there and fight, I mean, it's gonna be a short one.
Sure.
But like, go ahead. But then it gives you the opportunity for your spellcaster guys who want to be a little bit more trickery. You know, they can kind of go in there and try to cheat the system if they wanted to with their spells. You know, you got your thief characters who can get in there and steal.
The bad mouth and cleric. Who's just yelling at people.
Yeah, right?
Don't hit him so hard!
So, I really like this idea because it's cheeky. It gives you that. And then if you need... it kind of gives you that camaraderie. It doesn't really lend itself to to being the big problem that keeps the players together. But that puts them in the same place for something fun for the first session. And then something horribly wrong can happen. Keeps them together.
I actually was just thinking about that. Where leaving the tavern, you guys helped stay back to clean up or something like that because you lost a bunch of bets and you wanted to make like a gold back or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
You leave late for whatever reason, and you see one of the more popular fighters get murdered out front.
Oh, there you go.
Or in the back alley, because who leaves through the front from a fight club?
No.
Yeah. So in the back alley. You see somebody get murdered, and all you see is, like, a glowing ring on somebody's hand as they have... that's holding the dagger. And it's like, that looks like an expensive ring. You're not going to see those rings every day. And then, clue, hook, common ground.
Yeah, and even, like, allowing them, like, that the glowing ring, you can see some kind of sigil on it or something. Or
yeah, you can or see, what you, kind see of, you can like, see a ring. Sigil tattooed on the hand.
Something that now the players are like, okay, we got to find this person with the skull in the back of his hand and the glowing ring.
Yeah.
I like that.
And then he's actually just a henchman for somebody else because that guy actually owed money to this shadowy organization.
And drag him right in.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I like that.
And then that's one of those things that just spirals and there's always a bigger mastermind, always a bigger fish.
Yep.
And then eventually you're at Waterdeep talking to a beholder.
Xanathar.
Yeah, right?
I like it. What's your next one?
All right, so my next one is kind of like that.
Okay.
Like a little bit, whereas everybody is part of the same guild. Okay. Everybody is part of the Blacksmithing Guild. Everybody's part of the Thieves Guild. Probably going to be a more common one.
Okay.
My favorite is everyone's part of the same Mercenary Guild.
Okay.
Because I always like the idea of that every big city has their criminal underground. And then they have the weird purgatory level of criminal underground, where it's like you're mostly in the law.
Yeah.
And sometimes the law has you do work for them, where they have to turn the other way for you to get it done. So it's...
Yeah, you could be that honorable mercenary group that's like the, you know, the good guys who don't break a contract.
Yeah.
Or you could be just that neutral, who's the highest bidder.
Yeah, well, like, we got a highest bidder, like the city tries to hire us, we tell them, So, we'll do it. You gotta not look when we do it. And you have to not question what happens.
Yeah.
But it'll get done.
You know what you're hiring.
Yeah,
we get things done.
You know why you're here. We know why you're here. Let's not...
Yeah.
Let's not beat around the bush here. And you are some of the newest recruits who get assigned to be in the a squad together.
Okay.
So that's why you're together. Boom, right there. And you take jobs until that job comes around. And then there you have your plot hook.
I like it.
And then you would have the struggle of balancing your work, which is paying you, getting you experience, getting you stuff, getting you renown, getting you in people's doors, with actively finding out what the ringleader or what your local squadron leader is actually up to. Who is he talking to when he thinks nobody's looking? That kind of thing. So, and I really like that one because that is a reason that everybody's together.
Okay.
That is definitely common ground for them to be on. Because you don't join a mercenary group unless you're looking for money. And working in a group is a great way to take down bigger things or get jobs done, which equals more money. So following that path of logic, you might not like each other, but you're going to work together. And everyone kind of always likes to fall on some kind of structure. So if you have a pre-represented hierarchy in this guild, then people will understand it and be wants to fall into it. It gives them a home base, a place to go back to, unless you go the route of it's raided by a rival mercenary group or something like that.
Eventually.
Yeah, probably. Which, there you go, your squadron leader is a double agent.
Yeah.
Or from the inside, something, I don't know. But I like the aspect of having a home base that is more than just somebody's house.
Yes.
Like, because I always love thinking of adventuring parties who always just go back to the Wizard's Tower.
Yeah.
Because, to me, it's everybody going back to chill in the Wizard's living room. Just drinking coffee around the in the living room as all this magic crap is going on around them.
Like, get your dirty boots off my coffee table.
I said no shoes in the house. You put your sword down.
Snaps his fingers. Everyone's shoes are gone.
Yeah, right?
Hey, where our shoes go? The plane of fire.
The wizard is just sitting in front of the door as everybody comes through with prestidigitation ready.
Yeah,
just cleaning them. Everybody. But, like, having an actual structured base. Like, an actual base.
Yes.
It just feels really cool to me.
That is definitely an episode on its own, too.
Right.
Because I love giving the players a base.
Yes.
And, like, I mean, I've had a day where we spent 4 hours with one of my older groups. And they, I mean, in too much detail, built an inn. Like, they were awarded the ability to buy land in the city for where they work. And they decided to take over this old tavern and then buy the plot of land next to it, which was an inn. And they went through, like, the whole, like, how much it would cost to have the buildings connected, redone. When they built it, they went down to, like, how many rooms can we fit into this, like, plan? And how much, like, per room would be charged, rolling out average costs for the month, how much it would generate. I mean, a four-hour day of just building a fantasy tavern in. Craziness. And I love giving players somewhere they can go.
Yeah. Not only does it have the sense of familiarity for players, because as players love recurring things.
Yes.
They love going out on adventures and having someplace to bring the stuff back to.
Yep.
Because you go and you raid a lich's lair, you have all these artifact level things and super minor things. Plus, that guy's probably got some really nice looking art.
There's only I want so that in much,
my living room.
There's only so much you can fit in your bags, too. You know, like, there's only so much you can carry That's on true. Yourself. So, like, you don't want to be a walking bank.
Yeah.
So, to have somewhere where the players can
construct a vault.
Just drop their things off.
Yeah.
And just all the extra stuff.
Even if you just Skyrim it.
Yeah.
You just walk in, drop everything on the floor in your living room.
Well, I mean,
leave and lock the door.
I always sorted my things out into like different boxes and chests, but I'm that person. But I get it, like it works, and it does give us something as game masters and dungeon masters to threaten the players with.
Right, something to take away.
Yes,
that's probably the more fun part.
I don't like to just see. That's the thing where it's you gotta let it build. You gotta let them have it and get used to it and everything.
Yeah, you get it at level one. I'm gonna take it away at level 8.
Yes,
or I'm gonna try to.
Yeah,
and then
definitely.
I am going to take it away at level 10.
I think it's great to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Because it keeps that drive. That, and I think it's just as society goes, we're kind of like not trained or kind of programmed or like thought to believe that like land ownership and home ownership is the thing.
Yeah.
Especially in American culture, where it's like that is like the dream is to buy your own house and have your own house, and it's not even that amazing. You know, it's just a lot of extra work.
Yeah, but that is the one true, like, resource that you own.
So, to bring that into your game, that, like, people, like, that's the goal of every character is to have this place.
Yeah, I really like, personally, the mercenary part of it.
Yes.
But you can totally twist that to be any guild, a wizarding guild, a fighting guild.
Yep.
The Thieves Guild, probably going to be another really popular one.
Oh, yes. And, like, it's funny that you bring it up, because it's actually one of the ones that I had in mind.
Oh, yeah?
With a lot of focus on, there's an anime I saw at one point called Fairy Tail.
Yeah.
Where when I wanted to build a game, I was thinking about doing this game where, like, there's a lot of players who couldn't make it or anything, so I was going to get, like, 8 people together.
Okay.
And just whoever can make it comes to the game. And then those are the people who, like, hey, we're all going to work together on this mission here. And just as they go up in levels, they would be allowed to see higher ranking, more dangerous missions. And, like, you'd have that structure in the guild where, like, if there's a day where there's only 2 players, I can throw a couple NPC players that they see all the time in the tavern with them.
Again, familiarity.
Yes. And it would be a series of connected one-shots. Because you get to the point where, like,
it'd be like watching a season of Supernatural.
Exactly.
It's mostly random things happen, and then there's just this one thing towards the end of every episode that's like, hey, wait.
Yeah, it's all connecting.
Yeah.
And, like, the group, separately and together, are building towards a bigger problem in a bigger story. And I think that's it just really lends itself to challenging you as a dungeon master, as a writer, to make sessions that'll last and be completed within one sit down.
Yeah,
so that the players definitely be swapped in and out without having that headache of like the wizard just disappears in the middle of the dungeon, or you know, somehow the fighter wanders off and comes back, you know, 2 sessions later. I like that.
The one guy who is there every game who just starts to become really, really strong.
You could assume if there's a level up that happens, then the players who like aren't there as often, they've been doing things in the background in their own missions. So you can kind of get like, hey, it's come to that point where I need to level up. I know you've only played like 2 sessions as level whatever, but come to more sessions then. Now your character's level 3. I don't think they're complaining about being stronger.
Oh, yeah, no, it's...
But it's like, it does, that whole thing puts pressure on the player to read ahead on what their character can do.
Definitely.
And kind of just keep that in mind, because you'll end up with option fatigue.
Yeah. Then you just have to keep it in mind for that one guy who was always going to be there of magical items.
Yeah.
And different resources that he's going to get. Money, for one thing. It's where I feel like if there is going to be that one guy, that you might have to pull him aside and be like, all right, hey, so...
You're definitely falling behind.
Yeah.
Like, here's, like, maybe even just, like, here's a couple freebie rolls, but you need to show up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the whole point of that was for, like, the people who can't show up as often and everything.
Oh, yeah. So, like, it's more so as a crutch to those people who work really weird hours or something like that.
So, you know, your players who, like, you know, this guy shows up every week. You know that you're, like, you're not, you're getting all the plot. You're getting all the playtime. You know, and I know you show up more, so you're gonna have naturally a little bit more than the rest people.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But, like, I can't, like, you gotta know and understand I'm not gonna let you get head and shoulders above everybody else.
Drop buckets of things at you.
Yeah.
That's just, like, having a bit of an advantage, Yeah, no, that's perfectly fair because you're here every week.
Yeah, and you know, even going like old school RPG style and giving weapons that are like class locked.
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, you get this sword that like a paladin could attune to. And then it's like, oh, well, I'm not a paladin, but hey, there's a paladin coming in like 2 weeks. You know, he's coming in like the next game.
Well, yeah, I'm going to go put this in my lockbox off in my room.
Yeah, what if I, you know, what if I give this to him?
I'll hold on to this for him.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
I think that something like that would work. Yeah, for the definitely. Means. I mean, and that's like, it's tacking onto your idea, definitely. But giving that like a way different party mechanic.
Oh yeah, and it's a bit more specific because doing that with a smaller group probably wouldn't flow as well.
Not at all.
I don't think, and it would lose a lot of its charm.
Yeah.
But it could still be done. But definitely for the people that have a lot of larger groups who. Everybody wants to play, but not everybody can always make it.
Yeah.
It's the episodic, like, Devil May Cry mission-based
yeah.
kind of thing. I can see that definitely working out.
And, so for my last one, it's not one of my own creation. This is, Captain Gothnog. He's over on YouTube. Also, I think on Critical Hit Publishing on DriveThruRPG. I love his work. Really great. He's actually kind of local to us. He's in Maine.
Oh, that's right.
And he did this Call of Cthulhu campaign. Where he had the players start in a plane that was crashing over somewhere in Alaska.
That was currently crashing.
Yeah.
In
process of crashing. So here you got, you know, these guys who are, it's Call of Cthulhu, so it's semi-modern. And these guys are, I forget what the players were playing, but, you know, one was like a journalist or something, maybe not, but.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. They kind of have their specialties, and. They were going to deal with environmental terrorist organization who was, like, shutting down or giving trouble to this, like, this oil plant up in Alaska. It was actually, like, everyone's turning into some, like, Call of Cthulhu stuff, so they turned into, like, Yetis or something. And
yeah,
it was
just horrors everywhere.
Yeah, it got crazy. But to start the players off in a situation that, like, okay, you guys are here for a set mission. You guys are the group that they put together. You guys may not like each other. You guys may not know each other.
But
you're in this plane
together.
The job
is the job.
The job is the job. You're here for a reason. You're in a plane together.
Unfortunately.
And now here's some panic.
Unfortunately, that plane has other ideas.
Yeah. And now, like, the left engine just went. And you guys are cruising towards the mountains, cruising towards the snow. The whole gravitational effect is happening to you guys now where you're like, in the air. And you're kind of floating in place unless you buckle yourself down. You know what?
Pilot,
like,
can't do his job apparently.
Exactly. Now I have a big D6 on the table. I turn it to 5. You have 5 turns. You have 5 sets of actions, of movement and action, to try to survive this crash and make your way out of this the best you can.
We want to put that to D&D. You got a boat who is
got a leak,
getting attacked by a kraken.
Yeah. There you go.
This is a big, sturdy boat, so the Kraken's not going to take it down immediately. But it's no way, shape, or form fit to fight a Kraken.
But can you get the lifeboats and the people on them and get the hell out of there in time?
Yeah.
You know, because it doesn't want those little boats. It's got its tentacles around something big that it wants.
It's got the big boat.
So
it wants the big boat.
Yeah, it's not going to go after you guys. Maybe the sharks that are in the water. Maybe the other things that are in the water. But in the meantime, you can worry about survival
after
this. The
stuff that you can successfully beat down.
Yes. So I love that idea of what he did.
Yeah.
And it was actually really just, it was a great situation. And I'm such a big fan of throwing the players into something that isn't so relaxed. Because if you kind of just throw it on the players to have that awkward meet, because not every player as a person is very capable of just jumping into it, like that social conversation or role play.
Yeah. So a lot of people need to be warmed up to that.
Yeah, it's a slow build. And if it's a campaign start, a lot of times the players don't actually know each other as people. So never mind as characters. So giving them something that just, you guys just are jumping right into the action and you guys are doing something and there's no having that awkward, how do we meet each other thing. I like that. It takes away a lot of the effort on the player's part.
Have the first half of it already handled because you don't have time to talk about it right now.
Exactly. and then the players have something to talk about.
Exactly.
Immediately.
Which,
after.
Like, that is probably the biggest part of it for me is, like, yeah, I'm a talkative guy. Yeah, I will start trying to, like, use a silver tongue to get out of any situation.
But there's no situation to get
out. But, like, yeah. what do I do? Like, I don't even know how to appeal to you as a player, let alone your character.
Hey there, pal. I notice you have a sword and, you're drinking a drink. What are you drinking? Drinking ale? I like ale, and...
Yeah, okay. It's like, how do you...
Go screw myself. Cool, thank you. Have a good
I'm
day.
I'm just gonna go...
Yeah, all right.
I'm gonna go over here.
Good talk.
And, oh, wait, by the way, I have your wallet. Bye. Yeah. Now, it's... It handles a lot of the hard parts. So, my last one that I got is a spin on the probably second most tropey way of everybody meeting.
Okay.
Or maybe not even a twist, I'm not sure. And that's escaping a dungeon, where you need everybody's skills to get out of the dungeon.
So you're talking like prison or like prison, dungeon crawl?
Prison, cult dungeon, could have been captured by goblins, slavers if you're going for like a Dark Sun kind of thing.
Okay.
Kidnapped and try to use for ransom if you're going for Shadowrun or modern thing. Or actually really anything now that I think about it.
Yep.
Obi-Wan,
you're my only hope.
Yeah. It's one of those things where escaping from somewhere, where I'm assuming you would rather not be. But it's completely system ambiguous.
Yeah.
There's no limitations. It just needs a place, and that place needs to be filled. And then you have the first session, or first two, depending on how big you want it to be.
Oh, yeah.
And the only things that the players need to know is you guys need to get out. Because the people who have been coming through the hallway that your cell is in, they've been working their way down each cell. And they come in from the right, and they go out through the left.
And they never come back.
And then nobody ever comes back through the left.
I like it.
And it's they know what they gotta do. They know why they gotta do it.
And they know how much time they have, basically.
Yeah. They got a time limit. And they have a reason to work with the other characters.
I like that.
And you have an enemy, especially if you go the way of, like, there's some organization that has captured you.
Oh, yeah.
You have an enemy for the first, probably, several levels.
Yeah.
Is any cult, or whoever, that has a dungeon...
They're not small.
They're not small time.
Yeah, they're not small fries. They definitely have an organization. They have a group.
They have a front that's making them money.
They have a structure.
Yeah.
Where you have to work your way. Like, this may not be... You know, this is not the home base.
Yeah.
This is just a, what is it called?
A cell. Branch.
Yeah, a branch or a cell of this organization. I like that.
Yeah, it's classic. You've seen it done in so many different games, movies, books.
Definitely.
Probably other campaigns that you've played in.
I can name a couple, probably, yeah.
But it's just like starting a tavern. It's classic for a reason.
Yeah, definitely. And it because it works.
Exactly. And because there's not a whole lot of thought that you have to put into it. Which is probably my favorite part about it.
Yes.
Is just slap a dungeon down, come up with a weird name of some elder god or something like that.
Something.
And then Anything. It's the cult of this guy.
Fill in the blank.
And then there's 10 cultists who are currently in the dungeon that you have to avoid.
Yeah. Boom. Avoid, fight, whatever.
Works for
Find your gear as you go through.
Yeah.
You know, maybe having the players not share what class they are.
Exactly.
And like, then they just... And then everyone discovers it.
And all of a sudden, Jimmy, who's been walking by your left the entire time, who's been cutting people down with a sword, all of a sudden shoots a fireball.
Or this guy that's been walking with us, he keeps on darting in and out of the shadows.
Yeah.
And the first thing he goes for is he picks up the dagger. You know, and that's our rogue. Okay.
Yeah. And then it turns out that that's a cleric.
You're right.
He's just naturally a sneaky dude. I feel like that'd be a nice little twist.
That'd be fun. And that's just up to the players to, like, kind of mess with everyone else.
Yeah.
Guess what I am.
Yeah, you want to talk about having some player agency?
Yeah.
You can let them be as truthful or not as you want. Not to mention that going this way, any level.
And then you could have, like, a halfling and a gnome fist fighting.
Oh, God. You.
So, that concludes our 7th episode of Knights of the Tabletop. Thank you for listening. If you guys want to support us, head on over to our website. That is cursedicestudios.weebly.com. Weebly. Over there, you can see our blog, our newest news. We're on all the social medias. We are on Facebook, Twitter at CDice Studios. We're also on Patreon. If you feel like supporting us monetarily, would be something you want to do. Also, the biggest way you can support us right this second, right now, is to slap a like on it, throw us a comment, Give us a review. Share just us with anybody.
Go tell your buddy that you work with that there's this thing that you're listening to and you don't know if you like it or not, so you need a second opinion.
Yeah, tell a friend, tell a
family. And then tell him to do the same thing.
Tell your enemies.
And eventually, we will span worldwide.
I would love that. But, again, guys, thank you for listening. We're going to keep plugging away, and we'll see you next week. Have a happy Memorial Day.
Have a good one, everybody.